Well, you have just heard from Bree explaining how the world of personal injury works in Victoria, but it might surprise you to learn that just one state away, things are very different. So to explain the New South Wales personal injury process, I am joined by Tim Concannon, who is a workers' compensation expert in New South Wales. Tim, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
First of all, when could I seek workers' compensation for being injured at work?
Well, it's got to be work-related for a start. The term that they use is arising out or in the course of employment. But from a layperson's perspective, that effectively means that you don't necessarily have to be in the office when you get injured. It just has to have a sufficient connection to work. A lunchtime, for instance, would be potentially compensable, or even a work function, and in certain circumstances, possibly a journey to and from work.
What would be a situation when commuting to work could, if I fall getting off the bus or off the train, would that be something I could claim workers' compensation for?
There has to be what's called a real and substantial connection to the employment. Mm-hmm. So simply going back on your normal work day in the bus probably isn't enough. If you're a nurse, let's say, going to work very late at night and you're tired and run off the road, that would probably amount to a real and substantial connection. It just depends on the circumstances of how the person was injured.
So it would be a situation like, as I know that I've done, and certainly I'm sure many others have done, that if I'm kind of getting off the train and, like, let's be honest, I'm probably looking at my phone or something and I trip on an escalator, that would be a more difficult situation because that's not as directly related to my employment.
That's right.
Mm. Probably in a similar vein to falling up the escalators when you're checking your phone, if I do get injured at work and in my workplace, but I know that I was in the wrong, that it was something that I did, do I still have a case?
The simple answer is in most cases, yes. It's a fundamentally no-fault scheme, so you don't necessarily have to prove that your employer is at fault. And if the accident is in fact your fault, that doesn't matter so much unless it amounts to what's called serious and willful misconduct or it's self-inflicted.
I know many workplaces, I'm sure probably almost all workplaces now, have workplace health and safety policies and often sort of training modules and things that employees have to go through. I know some examples where someone may have raised concerns that a company isn't following correct work health and safety procedures. What can I do before that hits the fan? Like if I can see that something is really, you know, either if it's a slip hazard or something that's really dangerous or exposed electrical wires or something like that, how can I make sure that I can be listened to before things potentially turn very dangerous?
Well, firstly, I think as a common sense matter, I'd be reporting it to your manager or supervisor.
Mm.
If you don't get any joy with that, then I'd be referring it to the health and safety officer or the trade union officer. Mm-hmm. And if you're still getting no joy at that point, Safe Work New South Wales, which is the body now responsible for safety associated with work accidents, has a confidential helpline to report dangerous workplaces or issues associated with dangerous workplaces. It's called Speak Up.
Have you seen, sort of in the course of your career, have you seen more and more cases of people seeking psychological damage? Is it a relatively new phenomenon that people are claiming psychological damage from the workplace?
I think, I've been in workers' compensation for 32 years. And fair to say, over the last 10 or 15, I've seen an increasing number of psychological injury claims. Whether that reflects the complexity of the current work environment, I see a lot of the bullying, harassment type cases, which are very common these days.
Mm, so we're just starting to see just more of a reckoning with treatment in the workplace and what was perhaps probably not acceptable, but if things that were sort of, I suppose, more par for the course sort of in decades gone by are no longer considered acceptable workplace conduct.
Exactly.
Is it also a situation that workplaces have had to adjust? So in, say, a country town example where people think, well, I don't want to speak up about this or seek workers' compensation because I feel that either I'll lose my job or it will be an extremely career-limiting move for me and it's not like I have a wealth of other organisations in my town or community that I can go and work in. How much better have workplaces gotten at responding to these things and I suppose not taking such an instantly adversarial approach to someone seeking workers' compensation?
I think it'd be fair to say that the larger the employer, generally the more willing they are to accept that complaints are part and parcel of doing business these days. Perhaps smaller employers less so, because they might not have come across much in the way of workers' compensation claims before and might not even realise that really it should be no skin off their nose that there's a complaint or a claim being made, because it doesn't come out of their pocket, it comes out of the insurance company's pocket.
How often, when people first speak to you to get advice, how scared are they about the damage that can be caused either between themselves and their boss or their company? And how much in those initial chats do you have to try to alleviate people's fear that their future employment could be damaged, for instance, by seeking workers' compensation?
Very often. But there are protections in place that workers should be aware of. For instance, that if you do lodge a workers' compensation claim and you are off work, you can't be sacked for 6 months. The legislation also outlines the obligations of the employer to provide suitable work. And it is that anti-discrimination legislation says that it's illegal for them to discriminate a person or treat a person less favourably because they've got a disability, such as you typically see from a workers' compensation injury.
I think there is often a misconception about workers' comp, and it's probably said in like someone went and claimed workers' comp, and there's a little bit of an insinuation in that it's somewhat fraudulent or it's stretching the limits. How often in your career have you seen a fraudulent claim? Like, why has this become a bit of a stereotype about claiming workers' compensation?
Yeah, look, in my 32 years of practice, I don't think I've ever seen what's clearly been a fraudulent claim.
Wow.
I think what I commonly see is workers in a very vulnerable position with very few resources do tend sometimes to emphasise their injuries, perhaps more than other people in a different situation would. But as for telling lies that could be amount to fraud, maybe one, possibly, but that's about it. And, you know, we're dealing with many hundreds or thousands of claims over those 32 years. So,
if I have been injured at work, what's the first step in the process of thinking this has gone beyond something that I can recover from in my own time or using sick leave? How do I begin the process when I'm aware that this is more serious than that?
Well, firstly, you should give notice of injury to your employer. You've got to do that as soon as possible. You then should, preferably at the same time, notify the insurance company. There's a requirement that you also lodge a claim form with the insurer within 6 months. There's a lot of useful information as to what's associated with that process on the website of the Independent Review Office, IRO, that explains and talks you through that process. Also, iCare, who is the insurer for a large part of the workers' compensation scheme in New South Wales, has also got some useful information there.
If a specialist needed to evaluate my case, and I imagine that what I've been told, so correct me if I'm wrong, is that often in a case like this, if I just went to my own doctor and said, this is the injury I've suffered, my employer is entitled to have someone else who's independent assess me to confirm that my injuries are what my treating doctor says they are. Is that correct?
Correct.
Correct. Good. I'm happy with that. If a specialist needs to evaluate my case, who would pay for that?
There is a scheme operated by the organisation, the Independent Review Office. It's called the ILARS scheme.
Mm-hmm.
It's effectively a legal scheme that provides free legal advice to injured workers to get advice and for them to be acted for in pursuing their workers' compensation claim. And that covers medical reports to assist your workers' compensation claim.
What would you say are the most important rights that most people don't even know that they've got?
Firstly, I think most people are aware of their right to claim for weekly payments for their time off, their loss of wages. They're aware of their right to claim medical expenses, but a lot of them aren't aware of their right to claim additional lump sums for what's called whole person impairment. That generally takes a little bit longer to finalise than a weekly benefits claim and a medical treatment expenses claim.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly something that a lot of people don't know when you speak to them for the first time. There's also the right to bring what's called a damages claim for negligence on the part of the employer in some cases.
Mm. So sort of simply, negligence is where this has gone beyond an accident that happened in the workplace, and negligence is when an employer or a workplace has ignored or not, or sort of not fulfilled their responsibilities to provide a safe workplace. So in a way, an accident was almost inevitable.
That's pretty much right. Yeah. Yes.
What criteria do people have to hit in order to have a physical injury recognised?
It just has to be a physical injury that's certified by your doctor, mm-hmm, as giving rise to either a need for medical expenses or for weekly benefits. In other words, for time off work. So any physical injury that results in an incapacity for work or a need for reasonably necessary medical treatment is potentially compensable.
Mm.
If you're talking about lump sums, you need to satisfy a higher threshold. You need to establish that you've got a whole person impairment of at least 11% in order to access that extra lump sum entitlement.
So can you just talk me through that a little bit more? So the 11%, like, what does that mean? How is that measured?
11% whole person impairment is based on an assessment under the American Medical Association medical guidelines for assessment of impairment. Broadly speaking, pain doesn't get taken into account in that impairment rating.
Mm.
In the case of a back or a neck injury, they use what's called objective signs of disability, such as muscle guarding or wasting of a leg or an arm would be a couple that potentially could amount to getting you a higher rating of impairment. In the case of injuries like legs or arms, restriction of movement is generally the way they assess these things, as well as scarring. Psychiatric impairments assess somewhat differently. In order to get lump sum compensation for a psychological injury, you need to establish a 15% whole person impairment.
Okay. How do you do that from a psychological perspective?
Well, they look at aspects of your daily living, and they determine where you are on a severity scale in six different aspects of your activities of daily living. It's called the Psychiatric Impairment Rating Scale.
Tim, thank you so much for coming on. That was an incredible amount of information, and I think that you've well and truly busted a number of myths about workers' compensation and really shown the pathway that people can go to get help and make a full recovery. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Amy. It's been a pleasure.
What you heard in today's episode is not intended as a substitute for legal advice from a qualified professional. I'm not even a lawyer, remember? So if you are looking for legal advice based on your individual circumstances, head to lawfullyexplained.com.au and find the solicitor who is right for you. Lawfully Explained is a listener production in partnership